Hello, it's Future Library back again, episode 44 this time. I'm your host, Alex Botton, and very slickly, I'm going to tell you that we've got a guest. His name's Henry Faber. He's all the way from the US. He's a musician living near Minneapolis in Minnesota. Rather than me go through a pretense at being able to give you a lot of background about him, I'll hand over to the man himself. Henry, how the hell are you?
Oh, doing fine, sir. How are you?
I'm very good. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I have been a musician ever since I was a young teenager. And I, you know, I've tried everything. I realized that if I didn't try everything, I wouldn't know what I like to play. So I am a solo musician. I played with quite a few punk rock bands and electronic bands and all that over the years. And I just sort of realized that I really like making my own music. So I sort of said, see you guys, have a good day. I'm going to go make my own music. And I've been doing that now for a couple years of just this more the solo singer songwriters thing. So, but I played guitar for 20 years and I've always written in bands, and that's just sort of where I am now.
So did you, it's a question I often ask people who are kind of solo musicians. Did you find that part of the thing of doing stuff on your own was that it was much easier to actually get it done than if you're dealing with a band?
Exactly. I don't like to say that I'm a control freak, but I like to see progress. I like to be able to, you know, write a song and be on stage with it.
Sounds good to me. I'm getting a little bit of dropout at the moment. Can you still hear me? Oh, this is we're getting dropout already. Uh-oh. Let me kill my...
Hello,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
So as is so often the way with these things, we lost a little bit of signal there. Hopefully I'm still coming through loud and clear.
Yep.
Okay.
That's fine.
I'm getting a little bit of distortion on you, but hopefully it's nothing too bad. So if it gets bad, though, I will say, and I may move rooms. But yeah, so as you were saying, that you found that doing things on your own, whereabouts we lost you. So do you want to quickly run through that again?
Sure. I found that when playing with bands, I wasn't able to get a lot done in in the time frame that I always wanted to do things. And I think I worked a little faster than a lot of the musicians that I played music with. So I liked being able to take it from the writing the song to getting on stage and being able to play the song the next day rather than spending weeks and weeks while everyone had an ego about a song.
Yeah.
And so I always, as my friend put it very eloquently, Henry doesn't work and play well with others. I like to be in charge of it. So,
and it is much easier when you're a solo artist.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And the pay is better.
Absolutely. Well, that is the other plus side, isn't it? You know, if you're playing a gig and the pay is not very good, it's better if there's one person than if there's four people who are sharing that not very good pay.
Exactly. And what's funny is that when I do want musicians to come, you know, be a part of what I'm doing, the great part is when I get my pay, I go, well, here's the drink tickets. And here's, you know, $100. Thanks for coming out.
Nice.
And it tends to get them to come back. And sometimes they just go, forget it. I don't care. You know?
Yeah. So have you found that you've been playing shows more since you've gone solo?
Most definitely. But before that I actually started doing this, I think I played maybe two shows over the course of 5 years.
Wow. Okay.
And now it's year. I mean, I played probably about 10 or 12 times, which is a vast improvement. And I haven't been playing more because I've been trying to write more songs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I get randomly called to come play shows now, which is really nice.
That is nice. Yeah. And it's because I know from, you know, from knowing you for a few years now, that it was something that I think, would I be right in saying that there was a sort of sense of frustration that there was always that barrier to getting shows? That you'd get a band to a certain point and then
yep.
egos would creep in or something would fall apart, which would mean you were back to square one.
That's the absolute thing. I've been in so many bands where we got to the point where we were about to take the stage and somebody out or somebody's revealed that they had a drug problem or something else. And I just said, I don't have time for this. I just want to be on a stage. And I'm not compassionate about people and their problems, but there's just where you have to go, okay, guys, we've screwed around enough here.
Yeah. And the thing about it as well is that when you reach a certain point with playing on your own, you can almost then do the whole band thing in reverse if you decide to. Once you've kind of got a bit of a name for yourself playing solo, you can start to then pull other people in and say, yeah, okay, I've decided I want a rhythm section for this show. So you ask people and they come along, and there's no expectation of them sticking around. You can say, I want you to come and play for one show, and you do a couple of rehearsals and then you play. And then, yep, if it works out, then maybe you can do another one. And if it doesn't, there's no loss. You can just go, okay, then, thanks anyway, bye. And it's, you know, there's lots, yep, lots of advantages for being solo, I think. But you're saying you've tried lots and lots of things over the years. So talk me through your history as to how you've got to here.
Okay. Well, you know, when I first started, I was like every other teenager. I liked Nirvana, and I wanted to beat my guitar up and throw it around the stage and act completely insane and have, you know, have fun doing that. And I started out with just learning to play power chorded, you know, rock music that way. And after a while, it got kind of boring. Mm-hmm. And I discovered keyboards, and I discovered, you know, all of these different instruments. And I still am that way. I still go to stores and I go, what's that? And I pick it up and I play it and I mess around with it. And I found that I was actually okay at being a multi-instrumentalist. So it made music a lot less boring, I guess, than just playing the same power-recorded record songs. Mm-hmm. So from there, I started moving on into learning how to record with four tracks. And I learned how to produce music and put beats together and do things like that. And my friends were like, your stuff sounds like it should be in a horror movie or something. Cause I was making these very creepy little songs with just a four track and a drum machine and doing all these little sort of D things. And that's when I really started getting into the electronic side, which was literally a Casio keyboard. And learned how to make it do things that it shouldn't do, mm-hmm. from circuit bending to other stuff. And so I always try to like dig into things that are much more vast than just the same old, but as you've heard me do some more in the experimental side of things too, mm-hmm. where I got so into, that whole, Sonic Youth kind of thing, where they would just have a 20-minute song of just them making the guitars do things they shouldn't do. And that's, I kept kind of pushing all these things together to the point where I got a group together of people that was doing that. And we were playing every type of thing. We'd go from a folk song to making the guitars want to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I got tired again. And so I decided, you know, an acoustic guitar in my voice might be kind of fun. And I'd never really stepped out on a stage by myself. So where that all led to is where I am now.
And how did you feel that first time you stepped out solo in front of an audience?
I was scared shitless. And I literally was shaking like a leaf.
And did you find you had that moment of the first time you strummed the guitar, you thought this, when the wall of noise didn't come out from behind you, you were like, oh my God, what do I do?
Yeah, my whole body kind of went numb, and I looked down, I had shirts on, and I looked down at the t-shirt I had underneath the button-down shirt, and it was a different color from me just sweating profusely and, yeah, freaking out. And I was like, oh, what am I doing?
You see, I found my way around it. See, the thing I really liked about playing acoustic shows was being able to just talk to the audience between the songs. And mm-hmm. that's been always my kind of favorite part of that. It's kind of the thing I miss with what I do these days. Do you do much of that when you play live, or are you still at that stage where it's like, just get it done, get on, get off kind of thing?
No, I'm getting better at being a bit of a storyteller. And there's a song that I play called Wolf's Face. And the first show I played, someone says, what's this song about? And they, you know, from the audience, just a friend. And I said, well, you know, I had to, on the spot, I had to tell him a story, and I didn't want to make it. I just said, honestly, you know, I grew up in a very screwed up religion, and I like this little Eddie Munster kid. Nobody, you know, they all looked at me like, what is this little wolf boy? why is he such a freak? You know? And I said to the audience, you know, I told them the story. I said, you know, this is about being growing up and saying it's kind of okay to be the wolf, but you got to change. And when I started doing that, I realized telling a story really, you know, makes it more comfortable and homey, and it makes it more, makes it less of a frightening ordeal.
Yes, definitely. And that seems to be a good place to play in that song, Wolfface. So we'll play that in. So it's going to be weird because this is me trying a different thing out, listeners. So I'm trying to do put music into the show instead of just having it at the end. So this is going to sound slick to you, but it's going to sound weird to me and Henry. Because there's going to be, for us, there's just going to be a few moments of silence, and then we'll just continue talking as if we've just heard the song. And, you know, and the thing is, when I come back in, you're going to really believe that we've just listened to the song. So, anyway, here's the song. I'm going to play it now.
This death that waits for me. I'm the one with the wolves' hate. I can't anticipate this death that waits for me. Anticipate this death that waits for me. I'm the one with the wolves' hate. I can't anticipate this death that waits for me. This death that waits for me. I'm the one with the wolf's face. I can't anticipate this death that waits for me. I'm the one with the wolf's face. I can't anticipate this death that waits for me.
There we go. Wasn't that good, listeners? There you go, you see? The whole thing there going on, and that's... It's better to hear the song, isn't it, than to kind of guess what Henry's talking about. So that was Wolf Face, did you say?
Wolf's Face, yes.
Wolf's Face, there we go. So that's from your kind of demos that you're working on at the moment.
Right.
And so how many songs have you got worked out now?
Right now I've got about 10 or 12. I say 12 because two of them I'm not real sure where they're at, but... They're in the stages of where I'm actually able to arrange them, and I have the verses and choruses in place. So, yeah.
And
go ahead.
Okay, so, and how are you recording at the moment these days? When you certainly with the demo we've just heard.
You know what's funny is that most of the stuff I've been doing in just with an iPad, and I didn't think this day would ever come where this big futuristic, you know, a LeVar Burton thing is sitting on my desk, and I can I can plug in my my Apogee microphone and record an entire album just there.
It's absolutely brilliant as well. And the good thing about the things like the iPad, no fan noise, nothing at all, because it's all solid state, completely silent. They've got quite good mics, even if you don't use the an external mic. It's quite a good mic on them. And the best thing is anything that you're running on the iPad, you can probably run on your iPhone as well. So if you get an idea when you're out and about, you could just whack it out on the phone as well.
Oh, yeah. Most of the time I have my phone, I always have the voice recorder set up in it at all times and ready to go, because if I hear a noise or hear an idea or something comes into my head, I just hum it into it, and or I pull out my guitar quick and set it down on a table and record an idea, and I come home and it's like, well, it's still there. So much for the days of a notebook.
Yeah, and it's great. And if you've got your cloud settings all properly set up, then you come home and it's actually sitting on your computer when you're ready to go. Have you found yourself actually using any of the little kind of hummed bits as samples in the work you've done? Or is that something you'd consider doing?
Oh, now that you may have never thought about that, and I sort of like that idea. Thanks, Alex.
You're welcome. I think it's something that could be quite an interesting thing, because you can work up the song, and then you can still have this little kind of fragment of something, which is the first idea. I mean, I'm kind of very much a kind of first take is the only take kind of person, which I know a lot of people vehemently disagree with in my way of working, especially when I was used to record other bands, and I used to refuse to let them do more than one take on each song. It used to frustrate them a great deal, and I softened as I got older, and I can start to let them do another take. If it had been really catastrophic, I'd let them do another take.
Well, that's something I have to work on, you know, my skill, because a good friend of mine and I are actually building a recording studio right now with the multi up, and we're going to record bands, and I have to kind of remember that sometimes you have to be on the band. You can't be like slave driver. And there's other times where you got to push them to jump off the cliff and make the music. But yeah.
Well, I think a good trick I found with them was ask them to do a run through of it, of the song, and don't tell them you're recording it, and just record it. Ask them to just do a straight live run through and say, okay, let me just hear it. They'll play it through and you go, oh, that sounded really great. And they go, okay, let's record it. Then you go, well, we just did. And it's done.
I have to do that to myself, because a lot of times when I'm coming up with a piece of music, I'll sing it the way I want it, and it'll sound great, and then I'll hit the record button, and it completely just disappeared. Yeah. I'm constantly going, where did that song go?
Yeah, it's when you kind of forget the way it's phrased, or the rhythm of the chords, or the way the melody sits over the chords. That's the worst thing for me. When you've written it all down, you've played it loads of times, and you come back to record it the next day and you've forgotten how you played it. And I always found, yeah, this is the thing, with being able to record straight away, at least get a quick version of it down. So you started playing around, I'm guessing you're playing just around kind of the local area in Minnesota?
Yeah, I've been very soon. There's going to be some video from one of my last performances that I've done. I've been playing coffee shops and smaller bars bars and places that may open up. Hoping soon that a group of friends of mine, we're gonna book a show at the there's a little lounge downstairs at the Turf Club, which is, you know, obviously one of the more popular places in St. Paul. But they have this little room down there called the Clown Lounge that we're kind of hoping that we'll set up a neat little acoustic show or something, because it's such a cool venue. You know, but I love small, kind of quirky venues.
Mm-hmm. I think they're funner to play, aren't they? Funner? More fun. I should say funner. I don't even think funner's a word, is it? They're more fun to play, the small venues, I think, because they you have more opportunity for, like I've said before, talking to the audience. But, I mean, you've got more... It's easier to connect. I'd rather play to a room of 20 people who are interested than play to a room of 200 people who aren't.
Exactly.
And I think it's nicer if you can play, you know, if you can play a quiet set where people listen. Because I found as well, the one thing I don't miss about playing acoustic shows is the sort of chatter of indifference that sometimes you get coming at you in a wave while you're playing. And you're thinking, nobody's listening. And you're going through the motions of playing the song. You're thinking, why am I even bothering? Am I going to get to the end? Does anybody even notice I'm here? You know.
I have a friend who, she goes by the name of Jezebel Jones. She's a performer. She writes, you know, beautiful country songs. And when she's on stage, if the room is indifferent to her or not paying attention, or someone's being excessively, she'll just call the person out from the stage. Yeah. And she's feisty enough for that. I think she could handle herself, but I don't think I'd ever that point where I'd be like, you.
But you see, the thing is, from, you know, and I should point out to the listeners that, you know, I could have, it's not just a kind of internet kind of friendship. I know Henry in kind of real life. You're quite an imposing guy. Yeah, you know, I think you could quite successfully call somebody out from the audience, and they would probably shut up.
I would hope so. I hope they wouldn't just come up to the stage and throw me off of it. Or anything.
Well, you know, what are you? You're about 9 feet tall.
You're 700 pounds. Yes.
You know, you're an imposing guy. You know, in a good way, I should say. We're not talking kind of tad type imposing. We're talking kind of imposing as in a presence in the room. And I think that people would, yeah, I think you could successfully tell people to shut up. However, if you do it and it goes badly wrong, you've not heard that from me, and it wasn't my idea. Okay?
It's usually the one that's, that the people that are about 5 feet tall pick the fight with me. And I'm going, Napoleon, sit down.
Yeah. I'm guessing you could just put your hand out on their head and just hold them back while they're coming at you.
Yeah. I've seen people do that up from the stage before, so
yeah. And it's, you know, it is, I think occasionally things can get a bit fraught, but the thing is to remember, in a gig situation, you may feel like you have a moment where you want to kick somebody from the stage, but if you do, things are going to go horribly wrong. So
of course,
fight that urge. You know, I remember playing a gig years and years ago, and I think I must have just been out of my teens, maybe early 20s, and somebody was down the front being a dick, and I really wanted to kick him in the balls. And he was literally right in front of me, and I could have just lifted my foot up and kicked him square in the nuts. The thing is, the whole venue would have descended into a massive fight at that point. I would have been banned from the venue for life. There would have been all sorts of trouble. And so I didn't do it. But, you know when you could have had that little part, you could have had to fight your little kind of reptilian brain, your little kind of... the little bit of brain at the top of your spine that's kind of all about fight or flight. You have that little moment of going, do it, kick him in the balls, kick him in the balls, kick him in the balls. And at the same time, you're playing a song, and part of your brain's going, just kick him in the balls. And you have to resist the urge to do it. You know,
and I've watched a guy actually grab someone by the head and just knee him in the chest and watch the guy just lay on the floor. And they just kept playing, and everybody just kept going on with their business. And I was like, wow, I could never do that.
No. I mean, I think we all occasionally have that little kind of flash, don't we? Of kind of like, argh! But I think, you know, the fact that what separates us from our animal neighbours is that we don't act on it. Well, we have the ability to stop ourselves. We can kind of almost imagine how it would go in a fraction of a second. We can unravel the next 2 hours in our heads in a moment. Go, now I could do this, but this would then happen. And you go, and it finishes with you sat in a cell somewhere, and you go, you know what? I'm not going to do that.
I'm kind of a scenario person, too. I always sort of draw the scenario of something out before I get to it. And I could see that.
Yeah. You can imagine it all happening, and then you can think, oh, and then it would wreck my career. My reputation would be down the spout. You know, I've got a lot of explaining to do to people. And it would be just a whole unholy mess. So, you know, best avoided, I think.
So, or it could be the best thing that ever happened to you.
You could make
you never
name.
Know.
The thing is, it could make your name as being the guy who punches people at gigs. And you don't want to be that guy.
True.
Yeah.
True.
You want to be the guy that venues are quite happy to have back because you're friendly and you're, you know, you're flexible. But not so flexible that people walk on you. That's important to say to listeners. You know, you have to kind of balance these things. But, you know, I think getting the reputation as the guy who kicks fans in the nuts is probably not the reputation to get.
Henry Rollins got away with it.
Yeah, well, you know. But, I mean, I think the whole kind of coming from that kind of hardcore scene in the late 70s, well, it'd be mid-80s, wouldn't it, really? The kind of early to mid-80s kind of hardcore scene, I think you could get away with it then. But I think now if you did it, firstly, I think people would be more likely to call the police than they maybe were. So don't go getting any ideas there.
Yeah, I don't think too many singer-songwriters incite riots. Not no, too many.
I don't think if any have. I know that Bob Dylan got people annoyed when he went electric, but if the worst comes to the worst and somebody shouts Judas at you, I'm sure you can live with that. Your phone seems to be buzzing at you.
Oh, it's my wife's alarm. Give me 1 second.
Okay. So this is what happens, listeners. We live things happen. There we go. That was exciting.
Sorry about that.
So what was that that just went off?
My wife's alarm. She works overnight, so.
Oh right. Okay. So you've putting together songs. So you've got demos of songs at the moment, and we will play another one in a few moments. But what's the plan with the songs at the moment? Are you looking towards doing an album?
Yes. I'm trying to, I guess, kind of group everybody and group the songs into being properly put together. There may be stuff that moves to a second record later on, but I'm just to make sure that they all fit together and sticking to that darker, folkier side of things is it's kind of hard when I come from playing everything. I want to always play, you know, pull out some punk rock chords or something.
You know? You see, that's what side projects are for.
Exactly.
You could start doing that as a little kind of, you know, when you've got the itch to do something like that, just do it. And then just have them sit and kind of pile up on a hard drive. And then when you've got enough of those, you go, oh, I've got a load of songs here. I could do something with these as well. And so, you know, it's a way of looking at it. You know, you could do different things at different times and there's no harm in it. So you're looking to do a full, would it be under the name Henry Faber?
Yep. I used to use monikers and all these different, you know, different names, and I kind of realized that I just kept jumping between names.
Yeah, I mean, as anybody who has been a person who has liked your music Facebook page will be able to confirm, you have jumped around names a few times, haven't you? There's been various attempts at various things. And I think ultimately sticking with your name is often a good way to do it.
Well, it's what I find really funny, and I was telling a friend this the other day, is when I was playing music under my real first name, which is Rick, when I had rickfaber.com and had music there, I got zero hits. Nobody was listening to anything. For some reason, when I changed it to Henry Faber, my middle name, all of a sudden, all these people started listening to my stuff. And I'm like, really? People don't like Ricks.
That's it. They think of Rick Santorum. I'm trying to think
Mr. Frothy himself, yes.
Yeah. Other Ricks. I can't think of any of the Ricks. Other people called Rick, they think of. People who they don't like called Rick, they think of.
Rick's usually the guy at the college party. It's like, hey, Rickster's here. And he's the guy, you know, throwing beer bottles at people's heads, you know.
But, you know, where's Henry, you know? They think of the movie Regarding Henry. They think of various kind of French Henrys. They think of all the kings of England that were called Henry. Mm-hmm. They think of Prince Harry, whose actual name is Henry. You know, they think of all these things. So it's got a slightly different, you know, different vibe to it.
It sounds more manly, I think, too. Yeah.
You know, Rick Faber, it's a perfectly fine name, but Henry Faber, you know, it looks better written down, which is a very important thing. And this is something I say to young bands all the time. Well, I would if I talk to young bands anymore, but I used to say it to bands all the time, which is, it's an important thing. When you get your new band name, write it down and see what it looks like.
Exactly.
Because if it sounds great and it's memorable, but looks shit written down, dump it. Dump it straight away.
I was doing some proofs on some t-shirt designs that I for some merch, and I looked at it, and I put Henry Faber on the front of it, and I said, well, that actually looks really good. And I spray painted it on my guitar cases and stuff, and I said, that looks good. And I did a little photoshopping, and I switched it to Rick Faber, and it looked awful. I was like, Henry Faber just seems to flow better on everything, and it's weird talking about your name like this.
But, you know, that's part, it's all part of the thing, it's all part of how you make music. So when you've got the album done, and what we'll do now is we'll play another track in. Yeah. Which one would you like to play in now?
I think we'll go with Father.
Father. Okay. So you're about to hear Father, listeners. Again, it's going to sound really slick. So here's Father.
Could I say these words have gone away? When he rose up from his chair, you could feel me take his air. Father, Father, you took my land. Oh, my brother, we'll kill that man. Father, Father, I decline your name. I'll bury you in my grave. Oh, oh. Thieves' hands will always be stained. You'll never beat me. No matter what you take, my lane. Oh, my brother, we'll kill that man. Father, Father, you made hell. You drowned my only son in the well. Father, Father, you took my name. You'll die, you'll die in shame. Father, Father, I decline your name. I'll bury you in and on my grave. Oh, oh.
And And that was Father by Henry, not Rick Faber. So with the album that you're putting together, is when you come to when you've got it finished, what are your thoughts about how to release it? How do you intend to go forward with that?
I've been looking at different ways of doing it. I do. In the past, I've done CDs and sold them at shows, and it's sort of becoming people aren't as into the tangible media like they used to be, and so I'm looking more at digital distribution or like download cards and things like that. You and I recently talked a bit about music distribution. Mm-hmm. And I looked into a few more things because I'd never really done it that way, and it's a kind of a murky field to look into.
Well, it's a difficult one to work out how to do it. I mean, I think if I remember correctly, I think I said that you need to look at iTunes and Spotify and stuff like that mm-hmm. as promotion, right. And use something like Bandcamp as the place to actually sell the music.
Yeah,
I mean,
yep.
I've been on iTunes and Spotify and all the other digital places now for about 3 or 4 years, and I've made maybe for some reason I always get my statement in US dollars, but I've made like $1.50. in all that time, whereas on Bandcamp I've made quite a lot of money. You know, it reached a point where it stopped costing me money and was making me money.
Well, that's good.
And it ticks over with a little amount coming in quite regularly. You know, not as much as some guys that kind of, you know, were in bands back in the day and still get royalty payments from large labels, but you know, there's still a small amount dribbling in. I mean, obviously I can't quit my day job, but you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to do that. So I think that's a good way to look at it. You're never going to make any money out of iTunes. You're never going to make right. any money out of Spotify. You're not going to make any money out of Rhapsody or Amazon or any of these different places that sell
right.
music. But you will make money if you sell it directly via Bandcamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's – I've been looking into there's different companies, but they a lot of guys that I've been seeing their shows lately, and they give it away for a promotion. They'll give you like a little business card with a number on the back.
Yeah.
And you go and you download it, and a friend of mine saw one of those one day, and he's like, "That's I like that so much better than getting like a plastic CD that's going to be in my car and get wrecked." And
yeah, absolutely. And you can generate these numbers from Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. You can generate like so many free downloads per month.
Yep.
You can get the download key, the download codes. I think you can get a maximum of 200 per release.
Okay.
And it'll output them as an Excel document. And then you can just add them all individually. It's a bit laborious, but you can add them all individually to the back of business cards.
Sure.
And sell the business card at a gig and say, right, okay, you've got this card. It's not got any music on it, but when you get home, go to this URL, type this in, put this code in, and Bob's your uncle, you'll get this. And if you sell it at the gig slightly cheaper than they can buy it directly on the website, then that can... You know, it gives them something to take away from the show. Or you could still do the CDs thing. I mean, maybe if you're playing a lot of shows, maybe having some CDs there isn't going to harm anything.
I considered that too, yeah. Just doing a short run of them or something like that just to have for the folks that are, I guess, old school.
Because you're always going to get somebody come up and say, "Do you have any CDs?"
Right.
You know, and if you can say yes, then, you know, here you go, have one, $5. Done.
Yep.
Then
yep.
they're happy. They go off and listen to it, and no doubt the first thing they'll do is rip it when they get home, and then the CD will go on the shelf, and they'll just listen to it on the computers. But like you say, some people are old school. Some people like to listen in their car. You know, all these different things. But it's an interesting time for music distribution because you kind of have to work out how to make value out of things that people now don't feel there's any intrinsic value to.
Yep. We were, a friend of mine and I were just having a discussion about that, you know who the Wu-Tang Clan is. Mm-hmm. They just came up with this thing where they're releasing one copy of this album that they've been secretly working on for so many years. And it's in this hand carved box and all this stuff. And they're talking about, going to museums with the thing and then having people pay to come sit and listen to it. And I said, while it seems a bit pretentious, it's an interesting idea. It's it's different than any other way of releasing something.
Yeah. And then I believe what they're going to do with the album, then once they've toured it around museums, they're going to sell it to one person. And I think it's maybe going to get auctioned or something to the highest bidder. And that bidder then has the right to do anything they like with it. And if they then decide to duplicate it and make copies of it and sell it, they can. Or they can lock it away in a vault somewhere. So, you know, you may find out some record label will buy it and then, you know, it'll be available. Yep. It'll be interesting to see if the album leaks, because you're going to know sure as hell who's leaked it.
They claim that if it's leaked, they're going to pull the plug on it. That's an interesting idea.
Well, I mean, if it gets, well, what I'm thinking about more is if it gets leaked after it's released, you know, after it's been bought by one person, you know, they're going to know if that gets leaked, who's leaked it. I mean, what I would do in that situation is, if I was the person who bought it, I would buy it and then I would make it available for free online. So everybody could hear it, but the one physical copy, which is going to just sit there worth a lot. It's an interesting idea. It's an interesting way to do it. I know there was a record label a few years ago that was doing something similar, that each of their releases just had one copy. And I can't remember what the label was called. It was probably called One Copy or something. Let me see if I can find out. I'm going to do what I often do in the show. It's going to be a live Googling. Prepare for excitement, listeners. Okay, come on, Google. Chrome is getting so slow these days. Label that releases only one copy of record. Okay, let's see. Okay, there's the Wu-Tang Secret Album. Is it Tequila? No, that's not the one. Let's see. Ah, it's annoying that I can't find it. But there was a label that it did a lot of kind of very left field electronica stuff and kind of ambient things, and literally just made one copy of the record, and it was available on the day of release. And if you got it, you got it, and if you didn't, gone, missed.
that's a concept. I like it. The thing I thought about when it comes to like the Wu-Tang Clan and that whole thing, I would hope possibly that the person that buys that wouldn't release it to people, so that if you paid to hear the record, it'll be like this little thing in your head all the time. You're like, you remember that song? Yeah, I don't remember exactly how it went, but I liked it.
Well, here's an idea for you. If you decided to go and hear it, here's the challenge. I mean, I know it's about 30 tracks or something, isn't it? It's a ridiculously long record. But the challenge is to rush straight home and try and recreate it.
That would be kind of interesting.
Maybe you should do it.
It costs about $30-40 to go listen.
Yeah, so. You go listen with your headphones in. You have to listen to it in headphones, I believe, because I don't want people listening to it just on general speakers. And you sit in the museum, you listen to it, and then you leave. I don't know if they'd allow you to take notes or anything. You could maybe make some notes about what you remembered about the song, and then, or the songs, I should say, and then rush home
and try and cover them.
Try and record it from memory.
That's a good idea. I like it.
And then call it, you know, the same thing, and see what happens. It's a bit like those people who started releasing. I know there was more than one band released an album called Chinese Democracy before Guns N' Roses managed to. Once they announced the title, some other bands recorded and released albums called Chinese Democracy just to annoy them. I know that. I think The Offspring were intending to call their album that at one point. I think they should have done. I think everybody that year should have called their album Chinese Democracy.
It would be an interesting thing to walk through the store and just the Chinese Democracy. What is going on?
Every record from the whole of that year should have been called Chinese Democracy. I think that would have been amazing.
Did they ever release that record?
Yeah, apparently it was shit.
Okay.
Hold on, let me find the... I'll live Google that as well. Chinese Democracy. Let's see. Wikipedia will tell us all about that. It was 2008 it came out. Shit really? Cover. Really bad cover. There was... Apparently it was leaked. It was censored in China. I know that other bands, I know that there was another band named it as well. I can't remember who it was that called their album Chinese Democracy. There's all sorts of stuff. It didn't do very well. I think the reviews weren't particularly great. Metacritic has got it about 64.
He was just too busy. He was just too busy making out with Lana Del Rey or something.
A horrible thing. I mean, and recently, I mean, any live footage of them, they've really not done well. So, something's ringing at me as well now. Okay. This has been a day of alarms, hasn't it?
I know.
Let's see, who have we got on here? Oh, Sebastian Bach was on it. Wasn't he in some awful band years ago? Yeah, I'm learning all sorts of things about this. There you go. Yeah, so that was, 2008. It was the first album since 1993 that they'd made. 15 years for that.
Jeez. I remember Buckethead or somebody was supposed to be in the band too.
There's a guy called Buckethead. I don't think he was in the band by the time they went live with it. But there were no original members apart from, I think Dizzy Reed had been in the original lineup, maybe, but nobody else.
One of the replacements was in it too. Briefly, Stinson, or what was his name? Wow. I should know better. I live in Minnesota.
I have no idea. Let's see. Additional personnel. I'll tell you who was on it. We'll tell you who was on it, listeners. This is how exciting it is. So we had Waxel, as he likes to be known, Waxel Rose, on vocals and piano. Ron Bumblefoot Thal, I think, on lead and rhythm guitars. Dizzy Reed on keyboards. Tommy Stinson on bass. Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yep.
Richard Fortus on rhythm guitar, and Chris Pittman on keyboards, and Frank Ferrer on drums. Their former members that contributed were Paul Tobias, Buckethead, Robin Fink, Brian Mantia, and Josh Fries, plus Sebastian Bach, Pete Scaturo, Susie Katayama, Patty Hood, and then additional personnel. I can't even be bothered. It goes on and on and on. More people than you need to make a record, to be honest.
Yeah, all the information you never needed.
Yeah, and apparently it cost a fortune. It runs for 71 minutes and 18 seconds. So anybody who hasn't listened to it, that's 71 minutes and 18 seconds of your life that Geffen will not be refunding you for if you buy it. So maybe avoid that. I wouldn't bother.
The hell with you, David Geffen.
Yeah. Sorry, David Geffen, but you done goofed, David Geffen. You done goofed. And now they're just a shocker. I mean, the thing is, they lost their 15 years to make an album.
I was never a fan either.
No, neither was I. Terrible, terrible record from what I've heard. I've not bothered listening to it, so it might be great. So, you know, that'll just mark me as a hypocrite if I'm mocking it and it's actually, you know, all right. But I don't think it is, because it's by that band that are rubbish and it took them a long time to make. And it's got a horrible cover. And I think that's enough to, mark it for trip to the sin bin.
It's in the dollar store bin, yeah.
It's got a picture of a bicycle on the front cover. Nothing screams rock like a bicycle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Although I have a friend who's in a band called the Brooks and Bicycles, and it is kind of rock, so...
maybe I've got that wrong. Maybe that's the most rock cover that's ever existed. So, what's next for you, then? Now you've settled on doing the solo stuff. What's coming up next?
Well, like I said, we're building a studio, which is going to be, I'm going to be the head engineer just for the sake of, you know, the fact that I know what I'm doing somewhat around a studio. So, from there, I'm planning to get a revolving group of musicians involved, and, yes, I will pay them, not like Amanda Palmer. looking. I've got, there's a group called the Coxman that, sounded interested in backing me up, as well as, there's just a few other musicians, and one of my best friends plays bass as well. So, it'll be a nice thing to actually have a band, so that if a club says, do you want to play a show? I won't just go, well, I just have a guitar. Yeah. And a lot of times they want you to be up there with a full band. And so that's the next stage in all this, is being able to play more and more shows. I'd like to be exhausted with shows by the end of the year.
I think that's a very honorable goal to have.
I don't have any plans for touring yet, just because of the fact that I need to get a little bit more coverage going before I can do that. So,
well, hopefully this will help a little bit. So if people want to find out more about you, where do they need to go online to look?
Well, if you're on Facebook, you can find me on there. It's the usual facebook.com/HenryFaberMusic. Or you can go to my website, which is henryfabermusic.com. And I do have demos, soon to have some video from a performance I just I played last month. Yeah, last month. In from February, so that'll be up on there as well. So they want to find out information, see where I'm playing, that's where to look.
That's what I'm just pulling it up right now. Quite a nice website. It's understated, looking good, white on grey. The standard links to things like Facebook and Twitter and stuff. In fact, yeah, if you go to henryfabermusic.com, listeners, it's all there. The links are all there to everything else. Apparently, I'm visitor 1,389.
Keeping
it retro with the counter there.
Oh yeah, I did that as a joke. A friend of mine's like, you have a hit counter on your website. I said, yep.
You know what would make it perfect though is if you had a little thing that said hit counter and then it just had a little broken graphic image. That's what a hit counter should look like. You go and look at a website now that's like 20 years old and it has a hit counter at the bottom, and the hit counter image, the service that provided the hit counter is long gone, so there's just a broken image link image sitting there. And I think that's almost what you need, but I think it would ruin the website, because
or we could just put a GIF of somebody like counting on his fingers and someone smacking him with a pie, you know.
Yeah. Or you could just put a GIF of it just counting up.
Yeah, just have it spinning out of control.
Yeah, it's always counting up, just relentlessly. And then nobody's going to notice, because they're never going to come back to look at the number at the bottom, are they? Or they are now, aren't they, because we've talked about it. Shit, okay. Probably best just to leave it as it is.
We'll make it an Easter egg on the website.
Yeah. Hide it somewhere. Hide it so if somebody clicks a certain letter in your name or something, make a little image map, keep it retro that way. Click a certain letter on your name and maybe something else happens. That could be exciting. So, but yeah, okay. So, well, before we finish, is there anything you would like to add that I maybe haven't covered?
Wow. I can't think of anything.
Okay. Well, hopefully we've covered enough for people to want to go and listen. And we've had the great experiment of actually playing some music during the show. To round it out, what would you like to have played to finish things off?
Why don't we go with Liar Liar?
Sounds like a plan to me. All that's left to say then is you've been listening to Future Library, 44th episode. Thanks for sticking with it. And go and listen to Henry's music. You've heard some of it during the show. And in a minute, well, not a minute, in a few seconds, you're going to hear Liar Liar. So all that's left for me to say now is a big Future Library goodbye. Goodbye.
Bye.
This to say, I am not your leader, I am not your slave. Oh, la da dum da dum da dum da dum da dum da, la dum da dum da dum da dum da dum da da. By the earliest moonlight, I have not run. I have fucked it all up, but still she is not run. I am standing here with all of this pain, self-inflicted wounds washing in. la dum da dum da dum da dum da dum da dum da.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Botton. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbotton.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening. Thank you.